So, the title is Root Interrupters, Fatigue Erosion, and Other Material Agencies. The project that I'm focusing on in the larger frame for a research project in Oslo is the DETOUR project, which has created rest stops with specific viewpoints vis-a-vis upon the Norwegian landscape or throughout Norway. And I'm focusing on just two things, and two of the well-known fjords there, marked here on this map. The first one that I will show is the southern one, and the next one, so it's called Herajane, the lower one, and Stegastein, the one above. Actually, it's been featured in lots of tourist journals and things like that. So at these sites, artistic or design interventions in landscape design, but also just in kind of plain architecture, have been made to kind of mark these places in a specific way. This is the one at the Hardanga Fjord, which has this specific toilet building, and very peculiar with the yellow and the local stone that is used and polished for the building. And the other one is called the Stegastein, and that's kind of a bridge that ends in empty space and bends back towards with a glass in front above the Aurlandsfjord at a height of 600 something meters. So it's kind of a vertigo inducing special place with a spectacular view. So these are the sites that I'm looking at, and these are kind of built as places that should kind of interrupt the mobility of tourists at these junctions and make those places more attractive for tourists to stop there. So the frame, the theoretical frame.
How many of these places is
that? I think 18 have been finished, but there's more all over Norway from the kind of all over the lengths. I'm looking at resistances and attractions to get at this materiality of these places and how that creates normalities. That means, and that's why I put STS, Science and Technology Studies, into the brackets, that I'm looking symmetrically both at people and their intentions and what they do and how they change places, but also at the things there, at the landscape, at buildings, and how they induce or give an impulse that kind of creates a certain social setting too. So resistances might be many things in the context of my work. It could be kind of hard walls or anything that people encounter. It could also be bodily processes, which would be the fatigue that I have in the title, that you actually need to go to the toilet and cannot continue on your route and therefore have to stop. But it could also be on the Stegastein site, clouds and fog that envelop the whole arrangement and make the view disappear. And affordances, I use attractions above, but affordances would be the more kind of technical term coming from ecological psychology, and Gibson would be the author who's mainly responsible for using that term. This means the specific opportunities that a place or a thing offers for social or other uses. In this case, the tree will be used by the kid to climb on, so it has specific affordances, specific attractions for specific people. Of course, not everybody would be able and willing to climb this tree. So what we have there is a mix of perception, processes of perception, and actions that involve yourself with the environment. And to look at these more specifically, senses and temporality is really important to understand what's going on at these places. So that means the bodily involvement, the corporeal being. I'm using a phenomenological perspective here based on Merleau-Ponty's understanding of the corporeal being and its relation to the world, so that you actually experience and perceive a place not as a detached mind that kind of visually analyzes some surroundings, but through your bodily presence and involvement and directedness. And from this bodily kind of directedness, you always encounter and are permanently involved with the world around you, with kind of specific materialities which you see and which then might attract your look, might make you examine the, like here, the structure of the railing, which kind of appears differently in different lights, light situations. I'll show a short video clip to further. So here we see when I did this. Them to film the architectural and environment and the kind of landscape around and then talk about what they see and frame their views. Some are very silent like this one, some are very talkative. So these questions at length. But what you see here is that seeing this place, presenting it, is a temporal process where you kind of slowly move through a place and you look at one thing. You have to maintain your look, you have to position. There might be others who are present who also influence your relation to the world around you. So it is not perception on one in the first step and then acting and doing something in the next step. It is kind of a simultaneous process where perception and action merge and are one and the same thing. And that is kind of why this is particularly important when I want to look at how normality is created in these places. So it's not something that is explicit. You look at the place, understand how it's working, and then you work inside, or you are inside this place, act inside this place. It's very subtle because it happens at the same time that you see it and that you do the place. And because of this, it's a very kind of powerful arrangement. So I want to look at practices and how they influence places and how they induce change, or practices, how practices intertwine materiality and sociality. So looking at time and change, there are two important dimensions in these places that I'm looking at. One is situational or short-term, which would be like a weather, a rainstorm, or the fog, the clouds that I showed, or other events, social events, like a bus that is stopping there, and then suddenly you have a crowd which is populating the place and makes it look very different than it was when you are alone. So this is more an encounter, a short thing that happens and that might change your experience of the place. So for people who are there under these conditions, when I was at these rest stops in the winter, the railing is not attractive. It's not something that you lean on to watch over the fjord below. It's something that you kind of keep away from because it's wet and cold. And there's also kind of a more long-term temporal involvement with a place that might not only be generated by a single person but by a multitude, where you have a habitualization of bodies and matter. So of course, both the people that spend a long time there get used to the place in a specific way that is different to those who are just there for a short encounter, but also the place itself changes over time, like with this railing, which has been grabbed by many people and then kind of changes texture and color with time. Or here, where you have kind of erosion being accelerated by human behavior, where somebody made a fire on one of the rocks, which caused the surface to crack and crumble. And when I visited the place half a year later, this was still there, but in a different shape. So you have kind of traces. Some of them are more permanent, some of them quickly fade away. And there you have this mix of the place and the people who are there, and those so it's not just humans who develop agency in these places, it's also the place itself which kind of imprints itself onto what you do there. But it's an interaction, and both things change over time. But coming back to the kind of normality or the stability of a setting and the creation of specific behaviors, I want to look at how framings happen at these places. And one kind of evident thing is that you have, like in the Stegastein example, you have a clearly focused area that you can walk. You also have a directed, the visualizations are kind of channeled and directed. You have the glass plate at the end, and you have the railings at the sides, which you can kind of keep your hands to. So most people will actually really stick to that place because it also involves bodily danger and this feeling of vertigo. So you will have some people who will only very slowly go to the tip of this platform, and others who don't care, and you have children playing and lots of different things happening. And the next one is also how practice creates signs of use that become part of this setting. So those would be the practices that follow a setting very directly or very easily glide into the normality that is presenting itself there, or that is created through the uses of others. But there's also uses that kind of ignore the framing more or less, or take opportunities that might not be planned. Like there's a small patch of grass next to the toilet building, which has been used on one of the days that I've stayed there for people. I mean, that's in the middle of the night. That might be at like 11:30 p.m., but it's still light. Who came very late and then just got out their tents and put them on the small patch of grass next to the parking lot. So they kind of create their own thing there. And some of them might also, especially if might be undermining the normality and the structure of the place. And that's also a temporal process. Some of this might happen quickly and obviously, and other kind of undermining changes might be much slower and more gradual. Often this is caused in a way by side effects, not kind of a planned thing, so that it wouldn't be an intentional attack on the normality that is presented there, but it's more kind of detritus, trash, other things that accumulate and that change the place and make it different. And to work against that, you have to maintain, you have to kind of go there and clean things and everything. So here also the agency that changes the place is distributed. It's both in the people there, but it's also in the accumulation of things over time at the place. So we have some potential for reconfiguration during this kind of experience of mobility, of traveling through a country in the summer when tourists are on their way. Many of them have been to Norway often, but many of them haven't seen these sites because they are new, so it's kind of a new experience for them. One of the reasons why I put this question for kind of what is surprising you about this. And I want to look at these moments and how they might reconfigure what's going on there. One thing, one quality that these reconfigurations can have, at least in the beginning often, is frustration. That you go to a place with a certain expectation, like to this rest stop with a kind of yellow construction, but it might, in this case, because of vandalism, be shut down so that you cannot use the toilet. Don't really know what to do if you plan to do this rest up there. Of course, then you might, depending on how you relate yourself to your kind of physical environment and the landscape around you and what kind of expectations you have, also see this as an opportunity for pleasurable experiences, for exploring the landscape around that you wouldn't usually have taken a look at, as in this case, when somebody went down to the kind of seaside there where you can just look at the water. And again, there's traces left in the landscape which hint at kind of these uses that have been made before. But the difficult thing is to, for me, when I'm thinking about the kind of larger picture and how this, how change becomes a part of these places, is how subtle are these changes, how important are they, how much influence do they actually have on what is kind of central or most significant about this place, or is this just some things that are going on at the periphery? Of course, it also depends on the time frame. I just had a few months for this so far, so I cannot really say that much about it, but that's kind of an open question, how strongly everyday uses that do not have the intention of making a change as such, how do they still create change or reconfigure spaces and places. Okay, so thank you for attention.